It's a Monday. It's McCowan here and Shannon there. Welcome back. Hope you all had a nice weekend. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there.
It's too late. Too late for that. You can't do that. Well, that there's a rule. Mother's Day on Monday.
Well, I sent Mother's Day salutations to all the moms I know.
How's your mom doing, by the way?
She's good. She was here yesterday.
Fantastic.
Went and picked her up. Well, she had a little difficulty getting into the new truck. It's pretty high up off the ground.
By the way, I think you do too, but you won't admit it.
No, I'm okay still, but I can see the day, you know, when I may have to crawl into the Jaguar because it's ground level.
Oh, no. Carry one of those step ladders around with you.
going down into a car is a lot easier than going up into a car.
I don't find that. See, I find it the other way around.
Well, you know, good for you. I'm sure the audience is thrilled with that piece of insight. Doug Smith is going to join us.
They're always insightful.
Not necessarily. Doug Smith is going to join us tomorrow on the program from the Toronto Star. And, of course, he's been covering the Raptors since day one. And we're going to do baseball today with Shai Davidi. And there's lots of stuff to talk about as it pertains to the Toronto Blue Jays specifically, but elsewhere as well. But just off the top, I thought I would mention the Raptors because I'm intrigued as to whether Smith at this point in time, it's been a few weeks since we chatted with him, is prepared to concede that the Toronto Raptors have indeed tanked. And there is absolutely no doubt in my mind about it. To sit out Lowry and others, Lowry specifically, on such a regular basis with this vague notion that he's resting or has a boo-boo, to me is completely and utterly absurd. And they've been trying to not make the playoffs and have succeeded.
Resting for what?
God only knows. He doesn't have a contract, to the best of our knowledge, for next year. He's a free agent. Whether he stays with the Raptors or not is another topic to be discussed.
Would you want him back?
Probably not, because I would like to have the salary cap space to go and find another player.
Okay, but if you're the powers that be with the Raptors, if you said, okay, listen, Kyle, go shop yourself. You know, you're the greatest Raptor of all time. Go shop yourself. And if you can't get more than blank, come back. And we'll look after you for the short term. The question is what's the blank?
In my mind, it's 10.
Right. I was actually going to push it to 15 because
I won't go that high. I won't go that high. But I mean, that's without having a detailed analysis of the budget for next year and how much room they have to go and get. They need another significant player. They need an impact player. Now, whether it's at the guard position or not, I don't know. Maybe a shooting guard. I don't know. Are you comfortable at the center position? I like the job that the two young guys have done. But I don't know if that's good enough.
Let's save it for tomorrow.
Well, these are all the things we're going to discuss tomorrow.
Yeah.
On that note, let's take the break, and then Shai Davidi will join us from Sportsnet, and we'll address the Blue Jays situation, not the least of which was the performance by Mr. Pearson yesterday. We'll discuss that and more when we continue after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon on the program for today, and with us a longtime friend, colleague, associate, Shai Davidi of Sportsnet is joining us. You look beautiful. How are you?
I'm okay, guys. How are you guys doing?
We're hanging in. All right. Look, without further ado, what we saw yesterday, we saw Nate Pearson in his first performance in a major league uniform in a while. The expectations, I think, were pretty high. We thought he had perhaps solved his control problems and was going to be able to throw that heater at close to 100 miles an hour right down the middle of the plate. And that didn't happen. How concerned do you think this Blue Jay team is?
Well, I think their concern is coming from a couple different places, right? One, there's just an acute need for some stability of the rotation because of the attrition that the bullpen has been facing. And, you know, they needed Nate Pearson to be a guy, right? They just, if he can get, they need someone to give him five steady out of that spot. And they can't get that right now. So I think there's concern on that level. Now, you know, I think all things being equal, if the Blue Jays weren't in the situation that they were in, Nate Pearson probably doesn't make that start. I think they probably would have wanted to give him two or three more starts down at AAA just to let him get his feet really locked in and steady beneath him, make sure that the mechanical adjustments that he was making were really locked in, and then have him come up with a good base of work instead of just, you know, one okay outing at AAA. But that's not the circumstances they're in. And Nate Pearson's going to have to grind to figure it out. So, you know, I do think they're concerned. I don't think there's panic about him or that there's belief he's not going to be a good pitcher, because he's definitely going to. But, you know, the pathway there is just going to be a little bit rockier than everybody wants or hopes.
It's a minor point, but a small thing, and I don't know whether you noticed it. You know, here's a guy who's having trouble throwing strikes. And on, I think, three consecutive batters, the call was for a slider as the first pitch, which he, you know, I mean, he didn't have any success throwing the fastball for a strike, but he had equal success at best in throwing the slider for a strike. What's the thought process that you believe behind that?
Well, I mean, it's sort of his one and one A, right? You throw 100, your fastball is your 1A, your number one. But the slider, he really likes the slider. And, you know, my guess is that he just wasn't feeling good enough about the fastball, or that he just thought that the other team would be just sitting fastball in such a way that he's going to the slider right there. And, you know, when he's good, those pitches are coming out of the same tunnel, and, you know, hitters aren't able to discern one from the other until they're swinging over top of the slider, right? So, you know, it wasn't there. And my guess is you're just looking for something and just trying to be as unpredictable as you can be under those circumstances where you just can't find the zone.
You know, Shai, I just wanted to follow up on something you said initially, was that they didn't have much choice, basically, to pitch Pearson. But there's nobody really running away with this division. You know, why couldn't they have been more patient?
I mean, they just need bodies to get through games, John, right now. Like, you know, you just think about, you know, Friday night was the first time all season where, you know, the Blue Jays just needed bodies to get through a game, right? Like, you know, you're throwing Dolis, you're throwing a lot of your win relievers in a losing situation because you had no one else to cover the game for you. And they were in that similar spot on Sunday. You know, Saturday, you know, they barely got through that game. If Tyler Chatwood doesn't give them two innings of relief on Saturday night, you know, they might not close out that game and get to the point where Simeon hits a three-run homer that changes it. So that's how thin they are from a pitching perspective. You know, the off day Monday couldn't come at a better time for them. But there's just such a heavy disparity in terms of the amount of innings that the bullpen's carrying. You know, a Saturday night, I didn't calculate it after yesterday, but it's creeping closer to a 50-50 split between rotation and bullpen in terms of innings pitched. And that's just simply not sustainable. And it's starting to catch up to them now, both in terms of bodies on the injured list and in terms of the who's available to Charlie Montoyo on a day-to-day basis. And you look at their 40-man roster right now, you know, they've got three pitchers on the 40-man roster who either aren't in the major leagues or on the IL. And that's Jeremy Beasley, a waiver guy they picked up from Arizona, Ty Tice, a guy they just optioned, and Elvis Luciano, who is just still completely raw and trying to figure out, you know, how to also find the strike zone. So, you know, there's just no options for them.
Well, it raises the question of, is it time to seriously consider bringing Manoah up? His performance has been extraordinary. He looks like he's got all the stuff you want. He was tremendous in spring training. They sent him off to AAA, which is an advancement that I don't think many of us expected this year from him. And now here we are in the second week or whatever it is of May, and we're going to have a conversation about whether he should come to the big league club. I'm not one of those guys who worries much about being too quick with pitchers or with players in general. I think if you think they're good enough, let them play here. And this is a team that, while it's good, probably does not have championship expectations for this year. I'm inclined to say, bring Manoah up, give him the ball, and let's see what he can do. Your thoughts?
I mean, you and a lot of other people in Blue Jays Nation right now are feeling that way, Bob, and have been feeling about that way for quite a while. You know, this would be my hesitation with that. You know, the one start that he's made at AAA, that's his first start above A ball.
Yep.
Right. And he hasn't gone wire to wire in any sort of professional season at this point because of the pandemic. So you don't know, like, how is he going to handle that day where, you know, it's his turn, he feels like crap, and, you know, he doesn't have his stuff, and he has to fight through all with, you know, guile and guts. How does he react in that situation?
We don't know.
What happens if he gets spanked? You know, how is he going to take that? Because it hasn't happened to him yet.
Never worry about that.
The one drawback to that, though, is maybe you inadvertently end up putting him in the type of position that Pearson is in right now.
Right.
And now you've got two guys who are in the same spot, and you really haven't given Manoah the chance to build up to that.
Well, I think you're at a point. I mean, all of that has some validity, generically speaking. And I know that's the commonality of thought. Don't rush a guy. Make sure he's ready. But as you just documented, as far as pitching is concerned, this team is in a panic situation right now. In terms of injuries, they've had God knows how many days missed. And it's been everyday players as well as pitchers. And there's no way to anticipate that. There's no way to forecast that. You can build yourself all the 10, $50 million, $100 million complexes in Dunedin that you want. That hasn't done anything, at least not in the short term, and probably not in the long term. Because if we look across baseball, we're seeing the same thing happen all over the place. The problem is, can guys throw 95 to 97 miles an hour every day for a long period of time and not get hurt? And the answer appears to be no, they can't. And it doesn't matter how hard you throw. There aren't a lot of Nolan Ryans out there. And I think you know what I mean by that. So all things considered, I think you got to give Manoah a shot. And I'm not, if he fails, he fails. You know yourself, there is a long, long list of premium pitchers in Major League Baseball right now who have failed in the early part of their career. Many guys who don't get to be what they are until they're in their late 20s, even 30 years old. And this is about a circumstance where a guy looks like he's ready or looks like he's good, and the Blue Jays need somebody. They need warm bodies who can give them five, six innings. Your thoughts on all that?
Yeah, I mean, Bob, it's hard to rebut a lot of what you've said there. And if he had pitched last year in the minor leagues and then, you know, and was it at this level right now, I'd be all on board with it and say, let's go. But, you know, the other thing you have to consider is that there's going to be a workload consideration for him at a certain point. And, you know, the chances are that, I mean, he hasn't thrown 100 innings in a professional season yet. He hasn't thrown 50 innings in a professional season yet. So how much can you reasonably get out of him? Whereas, you know, if he's in AAA, you know, you let him get a bit more of that experience. You control him in terms of his workload. And then maybe you bring him up the way that the Blue Jays did in 2014 with Aaron Sanchez for the second half of the season. He's pitching in an important role for you out of the bullpen, giving you elite innings, late innings of relief. You know, that to me is a safer pathway, both for his health, his development, and perhaps for the team's success. But, you know, if you've already got Pearson, who you're not sure what you're getting, and you've got a whole lot of other unsteadiness in the rotation. I mean, you're making a pretty big bet with a pretty important part of your future in a situation where the odds are against him succeeding. You know, a lot of the guys that you mentioned come to the big leagues and fail. You know, they failed after they've had, you know, proper seasons of development in the minor leagues. And, you know, as good as Manoah's looked and, you know, as ready as he for sure will feel about himself, you know, I just don't know that this is a fair spot to put him in. You know, like, well, I think you can look at Pearson and say that wasn't really fair, and Manoah would be even less fair.
Well, but let me give you this argument. If he fails, or if Pearson fails, and you can get three or four starts out of each of them, you've got guys coming off the DL, starting pitchers coming off the DL. You have other options. You don't have to stick with this. This is, right. I look at this as a situation for today. Right now, by your own acknowledgement, the Blue Jays starting rotation is in complete and utter panic, chaos. They don't know who's going to pitch day to day. Forget whether they're effective or not. You need arms. And this is an arm that might prove to be good enough. And if you have to send him back down, if you get healthier and he's just okay or not good, so you send him back down in June or July, and it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that too. I would just, you know, knowing this front office, I can't see them doing it. And I like the idea, right? I love the stuff. I love the raw ability. But there's a part of me that just feels like you could potentially set him back a little bit, because he's not at the point where, you know, he was like, say, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Towards the end of 2018 and early 2019, where, you know, he really needed the major leagues to show him what he didn't know. You know, I think there's a lot that Manoah can still learn being in the AAA setting.
No doubt. Whereas,
you know, and I think with Pearson, you know, Pearson is just more just getting himself right. It's not so much about him learning as it is about him adjusting. And to me, that's where there's the little bit of a delineation and why I think you can be a bit more aggressive with Pearson and have to be a bit more patient with Manoah.
So Shai, what is the prognosis for the starters on the DL? What do you think the time frame is of those guys coming off, or do we know?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's the guys who are closest to coming are Castro and Malone. And, you know, I mean, I'm not sure if you're considering Malone a starter at this point.
I hope not.
There's just, yeah.
Listen, you might be a starter before this is all over, Shai. So don't you? Everybody's going to be considered at this point.
Yeah, I don't think that would be good for anybody. But I think that the guys are Castro, Malone are the guys who are closest on the horizon, and everyone else is a little bit further back. You know, I mean, they got Ryu back, which is obviously important. And, you know, they've got a series where coming up with Atlanta where they're going to be a little bit more stable with the three guys going through. But beyond that, you know, we'll see. I think at this point, you know, that you got to give Pearson, you got to be a bit more patient with Pearson and give him a chance. Like you brought him up, you told him, okay, let's go. So you own that a little bit. You've got to give him some run, and you have to have some patience and be ready to live with it. And, you know, at this point your external options aren't great because the trade market isn't going to develop for you. You're going to be paying a king's ransom, especially now. Mm-hmm. And if you want to sign somebody who's out there, well, you're going to have to spend the time developing them and getting them ready. So, you know, that horizon isn't near term enough to help you. So
how would you define run for Pearson then? Is it what Bob said, four or five starts?
I think you've got to give him a little bit more than that. Like, as long as he's not drowning, you know, I mean, if it's another start like Sunday, then, you know, obviously we're having a different conversation, but you know, assuming that that's going to level out a little bit, and you're going to start seeing some progress, then, you know, I think you've got to play it out as long as he's not going backwards.
Yeah, just for the purpose of clarity here, I am not for the second suggesting Manoah be called up and Pearson be sent down. I think, and I know it's not common to have two guys who arguably aren't ready for the major leagues in your starting rotation, but it isn't just the depth of the rotation. The rotation depth was a problem at the beginning of the year if everybody was healthy, correct?
Yeah, well, I mean, it looked a little better at that point. It looked a little better at that point when they still had Tanner Roark, and you know, and Roark's not in the organization anymore, and you know, you've had some of the other issues develop. But yeah, it definitely thinned out pretty fast. You know, TJ Zoik is potentially coming back, and that'll help. But you know, it's definitely not where you wanted it to be.
No, and Kay looked like, you know, he has had moments where he looked like he's a major league pitcher, and then he's had moments where he looks like he's a BP pitcher. So, you know, and I'm not, I just want to clarify, I'm not suggesting Pearson be sent down. I think you run him out there at least four or five times to let him settle in, no matter what the consequences are. I mean, even if he gets hammered around, but Manoah is an option that I would consider.
But Bob, I gotta tell you, Bob, you I think you've kind of argued against yourself a couple of times.
No, I haven't. How?
Yeah. Well, because you said I don't want to bring out two guys not ready for the major leagues.
No, that's exactly I said it's risky and it's unusual. It's very rare to have two early 20s, no major league experience, raw rookies in your starting rotation. Shai, how many times have you seen that happen?
Yeah, not very often. You know, I think a couple things that have happened that have changed the, you know, the level of depth too. I mean, so yeah, I mentioned Roark, and you know, Zoik being injured doesn't help. You know, Kay has sort of gone into a bullpen role, but Trent Thornton was also someone who was in that mix, but he's been so good as a reliever. Now you're in a situation where, you know, do we want to pull him away from this? And if we do pull him away, how are we going to get him stretched out? And all those things have eroded the pitching depth and left them in the situation they're in now.
Well, isn't Borucki in the same situation? He's the same kind of guy.
Yeah, well, I think Borucki's been locked in. You know, they, at the beginning of the season, they kind of realized, like, you know, he's found his spot and we're able to keep him healthy this way.
I know, but he was a starter. He was a starter when he first came
out. Exactly. Yeah, so. And same. So, and Thornton, I think, is the same way. I think the Blue Jays are like, okay, well, he just came off elbow surgery. We weren't able to keep him healthy last year. And now he's found a role and been really effective in it. Maybe we should leave him here. And, you know, those things are all great. And now you've got like a great bullpen. The Jays bullpen has been tremendous, but you just don't have enough of a equal distribution of innings. Mm. And, you know, like you could fake it for 60 games last year and that was fine. But you can't do it for 162. You know, this is just going to get exposed. And so, you know, I think the Blue Jays were expecting to add a starter during this season at the before the deadline. They were going to get somebody. Do you advance that a little bit and pay a higher price? You know, that might be something that they have to do if things don't stabilize.
Makes you wonder where they'd be without Mats.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it makes you wonder where they'd be with Taiwan Walker. You know, like if you know, that was a move. You know, Jake Odorizzi was out there and he's hurt now. A lot of the starters that they were sort of looking at towards the end of the offseason have ended up getting hurt. You know, they've got Odorizzi who's hurt. James Paxton got hurt. So, you know, they dodged a couple bullets there. But, you know, Taiwan Walker was there for them too if they had wanted. And, you know, he ends up landing with the Mets and worked out well for them. But if he's in this rotation, we're having a vastly different conversation. And it's probably, we're talking about, you know, how close are they to Boston right now instead of the conversation we're having.
More to talk about, enough on the pitching, but we'll take a quick break and come back with Shai Davidi of Sportsnet after these messages. It's McCowan, it's Shannon, and Shai Davidi of Sportsnet is with us. So here's a problem that we addressed at the beginning of the year, early of the year, and then when Springer came back, or we thought he came back, and now he's on the DL again, and some speculation is he might be gone for longer than the 10 days. If and when we see Springer in center field, because we haven't seen that yet, we've only seen him DH in a few occasions, what does your outfield look like? And of course, I say that because Grichuk's performance, I mean, he's earned a job. I don't know that he had a job at the beginning of the year. He was kind of iffy. I think they like Hernandez to be in the lineup for his bat more than his glove, obviously. But are you going to, is this team going to regularly rotate their outfielders among four, if not five? Or are there going to be three starters here? And you put Grichuk in left.
No, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, they're going to rotate the four outfielders along with the DH spot. And on occasion, somebody's going to sit. But, you know, at this point, the way things are shaping up, I'm wondering if, do you just leave Randall Grichuk in center field alone and just say to George Springer, look, you're by and large going to be our designated hitter this year. We're not going to put the extra strain on your quad. There's no sense in us pushing you beyond this. And, you know, we need your bat. And, you know, mm-hmm. we're fine enough defensively, get you maybe the occasional start out there in right field. He's a very good right fielder. There's less of a toll on the body than playing center field just to keep him fresh and engaged. But maybe that's the way that you approach this, because, you know, Randall Grichuk's done a really nice job, not just at the plate, but defensively as well. And you can argue that he's been one of their most important players.
I agree.
If he doesn't deliver the way that he has, then where would this team be right now? Where would that outfield be? So, you know, I think you're right, Bob. He's definitely earned regular playing time. And I don't think it's a question of whether he's going to. It's just a matter of how. And there is always going to be a bit of rotation there. But, you know, like someone like Rowdy Tellez has really been pushed to the outside a little bit. And he's got to get going to get more at-bats. And, you know, the other person that, you know, maybe we start looking at, you know, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. has had, you know, fits and starts all season and hasn't been himself. But if he's not picking it up, then maybe he's losing some at-bats so the other guys can get in there. So I think there are a number of different ways that this can play out. And, you know, the Blue Jays, where they're at, they've really operated as, you know, a meritocracy. You know, you perform, you play. You don't perform, you don't play. In certain cases, you get bounced from the 40-man roster. And I expect that to continue.
Third base has been a problem, but it's really more of a nightmare. Does this team need to, at some point this year, go out and get a third baseman? Because I don't see anybody on the roster. I mean, Panic, if he's healthy, can play there, but he's not a stereotypical third baseman. He doesn't give you the bat. He's a very good defensive player, so you'll get that. But do they need a third baseman? Is that the missing?
Is it third base or left side, Bob? Third base or left side?
Well, I don't know about Shy, but I think the infield defense has been better the last week, 10 days. It hasn't been as horrific. Agreed. And maybe it was just and you know, Shy, players go through this. They go through windows where every ground ball looks, you feel like you're Steve Sachs. I don't know if you remember the Steve Sachs episode with LA, where, I mean, you know, he couldn't throw the ball to first base. And it became, he's a pretty good defensive player who's just suddenly got into panic mode. And I think that happened a fair bit with Bichette, but I think that's settled down. I'm okay with it right now. You could always move Bichette to second and Semien over to short if you really thought it was a big problem. But there's no answer at third base right now, is there?
Well, you know, you mentioned switching Bichette and Semien. You know, maybe it gets to the point that you switch Biggio and Semien, and Biggio goes back to second base where he's more natural, more comfortable. And, you know, Semien has played some third as well. And, you know, it's a lot to ask of him because he's already made one position switch, done it relatively seamlessly. But that would be the probably best internal option that you're going to have, which isn't ideal for the reasons just outlined there. I think Bichette certainly deserves more runway. You know, he just recently cleared 100 games in the major leagues. You know, we're still talking about a player who's, you know, very, very young in terms of his playing experience career. And Biggio, I'm not sure about the exact numbers, but is in the neighborhood of like 40 or so career games at third base. You know, he's been asked to make a position switch. And third base is super tough. You know, I was talking to a former third baseman, and saying, you know, the people who think that this is an easy change, you know, need to shake their heads, because the ball comes at you with so much spin. It comes at you so much faster in the major leagues than it does in the minor leagues. And Biggio only had 45 games, I believe, at third base across his minor league career. You know, he's been asked to do a lot. And I think to judge him fairly, you still got to give him another month and a half. And, you know, that lines up well with the trade deadline. And, you know, come trade deadline time, you know, Bryant could be out there. Kyle Seager could be out there. You know, you could have some decent options to explore. So, you know, I think that one's got to play itself out. But, you know, out of fairness to Biggio and just, you know, what a good team first player that he is, you know, he deserves a little bit more patience. And you have to understand that there's going to be some growing pains that you're going to have to live with.
I don't dispute any of what you said. And I think in part, it does mitigate the criticism that Guerrero got playing at third base. Now, Guerrero has done an outstanding job at first base. I think we all agree. There were those who didn't think if he couldn't play third base, he won't be able to play first base. He's going to wind up being a DH, and maybe that'll happen. But right now, he's a pretty good first baseman defensively, and we know what his bat can do. But if you can't find the third baseman, and you have Springer, who you don't want to get hurt, but you want his at bats, and you don't have another third baseman, and you've got another guy who can play first base. You got several guys who can play first base. Hell, I could play first base.
No, Bob, would you even contemplate?
Base. Yes, I would. I could.
No, but you couldn't get it out of the infield.
Let me clarify it. Even John Shannon could play first base.
Well, that's different. No, no.
John's an athlete.
Could you? Yeah.
Thank you, Shy.
In his dreams and mind. Could you ever see giving Guerrero another look at third base? Is that even possible?
So it's actually really funny because we were talking to Charlie Montoya about this just the other day. And he's saying, you know what? He's been so comfortable at first base that I don't even want to give him the occasional day at third now because I don't want to disrupt that. And, you know, I think that you can look at that and say, that makes sense. And like, you know, we're just moving pieces on the chessboard. No big deal. And I think Vladdy would be up for it. I know Vladdy would be game for it and would be all in. But do you want to mess with it right now? Like, do you want to take that chance? And like, that's the thing. Like, Bob, as good as it sounds, like right now, like, do you take the chance that you disrupt what you're getting from him offensively?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not suggesting they do it. I'm asking whether it's viable.
Doesn't make any sense.
It's not what I want to see happen. But here's the truth. You're talking about guys like Biggio who haven't played third base in their careers, or almost not at all. Guerrero played 4 years at third base in professional baseball. 5 years, maybe. You know, since he was 16 years of age. That's where he played. And did he make mistakes over there defensively? Yes, he did. Is his arm too weak? No, his arm's a gun. Maybe now that he's got some comfort defensively at first base, maybe he could go back to third and feel more confident over there. You know, you talked about Bichette, and yes, 100 games, few mistakes, small, short period of time. Give him a chance. I'm just saying, as we try and think through the evolution of the organization and where guys wind up out of necessity or otherwise, it's an option.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's a good one.
It's a fascinating one. Like the conversations I had with, you know, team officials before the season, their thought was, you know, best case scenario, they could get 30 to 40 games out of flat at third base this year. Like, you know, and that would be sort of sprinkled in. Yeah. You know, he's got the one appearance, which came, you know, due to a couple of positional switches mid-game. You know, that's the kind of scenario where I think they could use him. You know, moving him over for an extended period, I think is awfully tough, right? And the other reason we're concerned, it's like, yes, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. lost a whole ton of weight and is in much better shape now than he was a year ago. But it's still a big man, and it's still a really demanding physical position. So if you're asking more of him in the defensive end, does that take away from him in the batter's box? And, you know, my sense is that the Blue Jays have at least a part of them that believes that it does. And because he's been so good offensively, and you just can't afford to lose that right now, I'm inclined to just sort of let him be, you know, but is he be more valuable at third base? 100%. But I just, right now, I think don't mess with what you got.
And I think that's the most logical thing. I mean, you know, when you're doing the lineup card, If you can put Guerrero at first and keep his bat in the right spot, in the, you know, it's a no-brainer. The one I liked that you suggested earlier, Shai, was moving Simeon over there. But you wonder, here's a guy that really is, I mean, he's been pretty good, but he's not playing for this year. He's playing for his next contract. And does he want to go and play a position, another position, to play for the next contract? And that would put him in a pretty difficult spot, wouldn't it?
I mean, potentially, but if he also does it, then, you know, now he won. I think it looks really good from a team perspective. Like, I'm doing whatever the team needs. I'm like, you can play me at third, you can play me at second, you can play me at short, and you know that I'm good there.
Right.
So I think there's that aspect of it. But on the flip side, you know, you are, again, similarly asking him a lot to make an adjustment midstream, get used to it, play it well, and then continue to produce offensively. And, you know, Simeon has really started to turn it on over the last, you know, week and a half, 2 weeks, and starting to be a bit more consistent at the plate. And he can be a dynamic offensive player. And, you know, I think one of the things that the Blue Jays love to do is they love to have the positional versatility, and they sort of pick out the bat and say, we'll figure out the defensive part of it. But what happens is sometimes you end up with a bunch of puzzle pieces that don't perfectly fit from a defensive perspective. And that's sort of where the Blue Jays are right now. You know, they've got a lot of guys who don't have true positions. And when you have a lot of that, you end up experiencing some potential redundancies and sometimes where, you know, you don't have an optimal defensive alignment. And that's part of what the Blue Jays did when they constructed, in the way that they constructed themselves. It's part of what they had to, one of the trade-offs they had to make. And now, you know, you have to live with that a little bit.
Well, a lot of this that we're talking about is based on the premise that you got to have Biggio in the lineup at some place. And I don't think he's proven that he is an everyday starter. I think he's a young Panic. Where Panic is now. Panic was an everyday player, won a gold glove, right? But he isn't that guy anymore. He's not a guy who's going to probably solidify any singular position. But he's valuable because he can play a whole bunch of positions. Biggio, in my mind, is morphing into that kind of player. A guy who may sit for 2 or 3 days in a row, ultimately, and then he can play right field, he can play second base, he can play third base. He could play almost any place. His bat isn't good enough right now, Shai, to have him in the lineup every day if he has defensive inabilities. That's my take on Biggio. I hope that's not unfair, but I think that's what he's morphing into. And honestly, it shouldn't surprise too many people, because I know a lot of fans these days don't pay attention to the minor league numbers, et cetera. And I know you do, and I do to some extent. Biggio was not considered an A-list prospect. He was going to be a fringe prospect. Didn't hit well enough to be considered a prime guy. He was a maybe going to make the major leagues. And then his bat came to life a bit, and he proved himself to be competent enough at a variety of positions that he got the opportunity to come to the big league team. But the fact that Biggio and Bichette came up approximately the same time should not confuse people into believing that Biggio is the same player as Bichette. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you described the trajectory almost exactly, Bob. What I will say this, so I remember at a winter meetings a few years ago, before or maybe just as Biggio was about to graduate to the big leagues, and I was talking to an executive from another team, and he said to me, whatever you think Biggio is going to be, he's going to be better than that because of who he is and how hard he is. He works. And, you know, I think that he's the person that has continually defied expectations at every level. He's made adjustments and found ways to improve. And, you know, I think what you were saying in terms of what he was morphing into, I mean, if month one offensive Biggio is what he is, then yeah, I would agree with that assessment. But I believe there's still a bit more in there. And if he's going to get on base at a, you know, 350, 360 clip, as has been his career to this point in the majors, and he's going to, you know, slug in the, you know, in the high fours, I think that's a guy that you can find some regular playing time for. Mm. And but you're right, like the defensive piece is never going to be it. He's never going to be a great defender. And that's why, you know, I think all things being equal, the Blue Jays would love to use him the way Ben Zobrist was used, you know, for example, just, you know, all across the diamond, never in one spot too specifically. But someone you can plug into a hole if you have it for an extended period. And right now that hole is third base. And, you know, that's sort of the fit. But I do think there's a bit more upside there than sort of the current Joe Panic role, but he's got to show it at a certain point too.
Hey, if his name was John Smith, would he be having this conversation?
It's funny. I'm sure that we would be looking at it a lot differently, but in some ways, I wonder if it's maybe a bit more of a curse too, right? Mm. It's always like, you know, he's not his dad, right? And then you think about, you know, Bichette having a chance to surpass Dante Bichette, and, you know, Junior having a chance to have a very good career just as much as his dad, you know, and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. having a chance to be as good as his dad. But, you know, for Biggio, like the talent base isn't the same. And, right. You know, I think in some ways it could be harder. It's like, well, why isn't he better? Or why isn't he this? He's got the same pedigree. But he's someone who's maximized every bit of talent that he has and worked relentlessly to improve. And, you know, for those reasons, you know, like coaches absolutely love him and what he brings, like the intangibles. And I know it's not sexy to talk about, and it's like, there's no data to support it, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, every coach that has ever worked with him said, this is a guy you want on your team. This is a guy that makes you better, not only by what he does on the field. So, you know, if he didn't have the Biggio name, John, to your point, you know, I think we'd look at him differently. And I bet you that we would actually think more highly of him than we do right now.
Well, John will attest to this. Just last week, I made mention, Shy, of what I believe to be a deliberately expanded strike zone on the part of the umpires. And Biggio, one of the key assets that he brought to the team last year was his ability to take walks and judge those pitches that are an inch or two outside the plate and lay off them. And I think he's become a victim of an expanded strike zone, whether deliberately or accidentally. So I give him that at least. And I'm not negative on him. I'm just trying to project where this team goes and how he fits into this organization.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's the long-term answer at third base, right? You're right about that. He's not. And ultimately, he's best as a Zobrist type of player. Yes. But I think this team is best if he's in it close to every day.
We've got to get out of here. You got things to do, too. It's great to see you. We assume and hope you're healthy and staying safe. And we really appreciate you taking the time for us today. And hopefully, we'll be able to do it again. Thanks, Shy.
A pleasure as always, guys. And same to you. And hopefully, at some point, we can actually see each other in person.
That'd be wonderful. We look forward to that sometime in the next decade.
Yeah.
Shy Davidi of Sportsnet. We'll come back and wrap it up after these messages. McCowan and Shannon, and again, our thanks to Shy Davidi. Always an intriguing conversation. Well, baseball is always, it's a conversation sport. There's no sport you can talk about like baseball, because it's kind of chess-like, you know. It's slow, it's pedantic, it's station to station, it's easy to assimilate what's going on and easy to have an opinion.
Well, and when you consider it goes from, it's not just the game itself, it's when a kid gets drafted and by the time he gets to the major leagues. I mean, it is a
process.
Time-consuming process. Exactly right. I mean, and listening to you and Shy talk about it, I had one more question. Is how important is this year? I mean, when you think about it, they're going to be in Buffalo by, you know, the first of the month. There's not going to be many people. Isn't this just a development year again before everything opens up and they start to sell tickets in Toronto?
You know, it's a valid point. But I don't think the ticket sales have anything to do with it. I think this team is not, clearly the starting pitching is not good enough yet for this team to be a real contender. Could they make the postseason? Sure. Would you expect them to go deep in the postseason? No.
No.
But again, you know, as we say, You know, in the postseason, you need three starters. Can the Blue Jays, they have two good starters right now. Can they find that third guy before the playoffs come? I suppose. Having said that, I agree with your point.
But, I mean, I look at the Pearson discussion and say, God, you don't want to rush this. You don't want to. You got to take your time with it.
John, who else?
Literally, but that no, but that but that puts in
no one else.
But that puts in perspective the priority of this season versus next year and the year after. That's my point.
I get your point. But unless this organization is willing to go out there and overspend to get some 35-year-old washed-up pitcher, then you need arms. And they don't have any. These are the choices they have.
At what expense?
A 22-year-old and a 24-year-old. These are
at what expense? No, but at what expense of those arms? That's my point. And I actually
remains to be seen.
I think Ross and Mark are closer to my philosophy than they are yours.
I don't doubt that, but most management people are closer to their own philosophy than they are to mine, and that's why I'm smarter than they are. It's hard to be humble, John, when you're as great as I am. We'll take the day off, and we'll see you again tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.
What a way to start the week.